Hanu Parsha, Parshas Chukas. Zos Chukas Yeshba Shalosh Mitzvos Asei. There are three positive commandments associated with Parshas Chukas. Mitzvah Shin Sadi Zion 397. Mitzvahs Para Aduma. The mitzvah of the red heifer, one of the most famous, the most mysterious mitzvos in the Torah, the red heifer, which is used to purify one from contact with the dead body. Shenitztavu Yisrael Lisrof Para Aduma Lios Afra Muchan Lemisha Yitztarech Eleha. So it's not merely that, well, if you want to get yourself tohar from Tumas Meis, you better get a Para Aduma and do the procedure. There's an independent mitzvah to make the ashes of the Para Aduma and to have it ready in case people want to purify themselves. It's not just something that is like a hechsher mitzvah, that if you feel like becoming Torah, you should do it. It's an important thing that the Jewish people should always have this available should it become necessary. And then people might get lazy, right? Like, oh, okay, being Tameh is not such a big deal. I have to go through this whole procedure, the Para Aduma. No, I have to have a Para Aduma available. Shenemar daber al bnei Yisrael v'yikchu elecha fara aduma. You have to get a red heifer. Uchsiv lemata mizeh v'yisrael ladas bnei Yisrael mishmeres. That, what do you mean? You could just have said that the fact that God said that they shall take unto you a red heifer, so that was just in the desert. We don't count things that God told Moshe to do in the desert as one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. It's only something that's relevant for all time. But then the Parsha says later on that it shall be for the Jewish people for a gardens. Is that a right word? Something that you keep preserve. That has to be always done. Therefore, you always have the mitzvah to do the Para Aduma. So what about nowadays? No?
We can't.
Why not?
No, it's actually nothing.
If they found the Para Aduma.
They found one.
No, there's nothing actually about the Para Aduma that's specifically linked to the Beis HaMikdash, is there?
Absolutely not.
No, you have to make sure you have the right animal, yes? How do you...
Okay, so let's go slow.
Also, what good is it doing now to that be Tahor? You know, what are you going to do about it then?
Well, one example is that the Gemara says that even well after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was still some Para Aduma ash left. Because remember, it's, you know, in very tiny quantities. It's not such a big amount that you need. Even if, you know, one drop of the mixture falls on your forehead, so that's considered a hazaya, and you need that on the third day and the seventh day after you become tamei, and then you go to the mikvah on the seventh day after the sprinkling, and when night falls, so then you become complete tar. So there, the Gemara says that even well after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, when tumah v'tahor is not that important anymore, but there used to be a group of people who would become tahar in order to eat the chulin betara. That was like this pious practice that people would eat all their food in a state of tahara whenever possible. So that was one thing. And also is relevant for the kohanim to eat truma. That even nowadays, without a Beis HaMikdash, if you had a Para Aduma done properly and you had someone become tahar, then even a kohen nowadays would be perfectly allowed to eat truma, provided the truma was tahar as well. So there would be reasons to have a Para Aduma even nowadays without the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam records a tradition that throughout history there will be only 10 Paros Adumos. There will only be 10. So he said there already have been 9, and the 10th one will be done by the Mashiach. Okay, so so the first was done by Moshe Rabbeinu, then the few others throughout. He gave a whole list of others that were done. One by Ezra, one by the times of the Bayesheni. They were done a few times. And there were only 9 of them. And then the 10th one. So that's why people get all excited when they find what they think might be a Para Aduma. That they saw, this must be a sign that Mashiach is coming, because we have a tradition. Of course, that doesn't mean that just because there exists a Para Aduma in the world, that means we're going to be able to make the ashes from it and... that the Mashiach is going to do that. It's also somewhat questionable whether the statement is really completely halachically binding. If we would have, not that we should necessarily, it's a requirement that we refrain from making another Para Aduma until Mashiach actually comes. So the problem is, it's somewhat difficult, as we're going to see, to have a paraduma that that fits the bill, because it needs to be completely red. So what does red mean? Have you ever seen a red cow?
I never saw a purple cow.
You know, the people who say that they've created one.
So if you look, if you look at the pictures, correct. So
it's not red.
Oh, right. So it's not like a fire truck. You're not like a cow that's growing hair that's the color of a fire truck, but rather it's a brownish brown with a reddish hue. And in fact, some people say, so if you look at the analysis of colors in the ancient world, so nowadays, art history, Gvaldik.
Yes.
Art history and halacha combined, so that the people's perception of colors was completely different. Not that they saw different things, but rather that they, if you go to certain, I was reading an article actually recently, where if you go to certain primitive cultures that don't have the advanced color terminology that we have in English, that we could distinguish between lavender, turquoise and teal and light blue, and so the you'll show them something green and something blue, and they'll say it's the same color. So we have the same name. Yeah, it looks a little different. Not that they can't see it. Like they say, well, in our language, well, this is called green and this is called blue. That's silly. It's a waste of a word. Why do you need just a slightly different shade of the same color? Why do you need different words for that? That seems to be superfluous. So the same thing applies, that some people actually want to argue that para aduma doesn't at all mean red. It means brown. That there's no different color. That there's no real different word for brown and for red in the ancient world, which is not exactly true.
They had red and they had brown.
It doesn't mean the colors didn't exist.
No,
I mean,
didn't they have words for them?
Oh, so there is a word in Chumash when it's talking about when Yaakov Avinu did his genetic experiment with a sheep. So it does use the word chum, which seems to mean, which is a modern Hebrew, means brown. So it does seem to be brown. So it's probably correct that the brown has to at least have a reddish hue to it. It doesn't mean bright red, but it has to have a reddish hue to it. If you look the pictures, if you look online for pictures of paros adumos that have been bred in Israel and in the U.S., so they're a brownish, they're reddish brown,
yeah.
I would say. And in fact, if you want to say that red and brown is actually exactly the same color in halacha, so that you get into big chumras and hilchos nida, huge chumras. That the contemporary minhag is that most of the time. Again, different poskim have different policies, but most poskim will hold that if there's a stain which is mamish pure brown without any what we would call nowadays reddish hue to it, so that's okay. But if you say that red and brown is actually the same in halacha, so then whoops, all browns are now usser, and that's for a lot of women that would be a really really big big chumrah. But so again, we do assume that it has to have the reddish hue to it. In order to be a proper para aduma. Afal pi shemliani libi lichtover mazim itame amitzo shekod moatzad apshat. So with the other mitzvos, I have not hesitated to provide you discussions of potential reasoning for the mitzvah. Im hayis natzul shemalocha lechanich ba bonai v'hanarim chaver of yishmarim kel. That in the my point in this is to educate the my son and his friends with the suggested reasoning. The mitzvah zo rafu yodai va'ira liftzos pialea klal gam bipshat. That regarding the mitzvah paraduma, I'm afraid to write anything, because this mitzvah is so hard to understand even the slightest suggestion of what it might be all about. Ki rizla rabosenu zicharam levracha richu adibor ba'omek soda v'godel inyana ad she'amru, that the chachamim were talking about how deep and ununderstandable this mitzvah is, that Shlomo HaMelech was so wise that he discerned basically all the reasoning behind all the mitzvahs besides the mitzvah paraduma. So Shlomo HaMelech couldn't even do it. So me, the Sefer HaChinuch, how could I even suggest potential reasons for the mitzvah paraduma? Shomar Aleh then says in the Pasuk in Koheles, Amarti Echkoma, I say I am becoming wise. Behi rechoka mimeni, and wisdom is far from me. I haven't been able to get to the bottom of all the wisdom that I want to get to. So that's the Chachamim say that's referring to the mitzvah paraduma that Shlomo HaMelech could not even fathom. Gam Amr b'Medrash Reb Tanchuma Reb Yosi Reb Chanina Omer Amr li Hakadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe l'cha ani megala tam paraduma velo la'achirim, that the only person who ever understood the reason behind the mitzvah paraduma was Moshe Rabbeinu himself. The Chazal talk all over the place about how it's such a difficult mitzvah to understand, so how could I even suggest? So you might think that the reason is that it purifies someone else when its ashes touch the body of somebody who is becoming tahor. So that also other karbanos have the idea that when you touch it and you're not supposed to be touched and it's not fully, the full process is over yet, so then you also become tamei as well. It doesn't have the only, it's not only designed to become tahor. So we have, but the problem with the paraduma, but ikar apelel, if you masha shamati hu, al yosem mitaheres atameyem umetame hauskim bisreifasa. That here we have the very unusual combination, which is that the whole point of the Parah Aduma is to purify people from contact with a dead body. So once the whole thing is done, once the procedure is done, it's the most purifying substance in the world. But nevertheless, the people who are engaged in the burning of it and who touch it before it's burned become tamei. So it's metaheres hatmeim umetameyes hatehorim. That if you're already tahor and you touch the Parah Aduma before it's completely done, then you become tamei. And once the Parah Aduma is done, so now it can serve to purify people. So it's like the contradictory purposes of the Parah Aduma that cause the amazingness. So again, we said in other korbanos, by other korbanos, that because the paradum is not exactly a korban because it's done outside the Beis HaMikdash, as we'll see. But there are other korbanos that the people who are burning it become tamei. But again, the purpose of those korbanos is not in order to purify people per se. Not that it's a purifying object per se. Mikol makom ein efron mitaheres. Once it's burned, it doesn't become purified. It doesn't purify people. Gam kein atema gadol ba biyosa nasis michutz lamachane shaluk derech shara karbanos. The paraduma is not done inside the Beis HaMikdash. It's not. It's like a weird category all into itself because it's sort of like a korban that it has to be performed by a kohen, but it's not done inside the Beis HaMikdash. It's done outside the Beis HaMikdash. So you have the other nations who are bullying the Jewish people, and they're saying, "No, you're just like us. We sacrifice wherever we want to whatever deities. So here you are sacrificing. You are also so makbid that you only sacrifice korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. But here you have a korban, seemingly, that you do outside the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not exactly a korban. You have to accept the blood and you have to sprinkle the blood. There are some korban-like aspects to it, but it's not a korban per se. But omnam. Kama trufos bisbei ha'adam avilanos mina erez asher balavanu na da'ezav asher bakir meleim segulos b'hafachim, that you have things, medical substances that are do the opposite. What does that mean? Yikaru achamim v'chamim v'akarim v'il yadanu ma'us ha'nefesh v'shor sh'machos abriuso novin b'lais kisgulas ha'par gamkin lachli ha'nefesh v'otam ha'besik ha'sreifa v'achar yosefer Tirpa machalas hatuma. You have certain medical substances that if people are too cold, it'll warm them. And if people are too hot, it'll cool them. And it has an effect on people, no matter what. In other words, it doesn't just remain static. That the Parah Aduma doesn't... there's no situation where it can just remain static. Either it changes your status. So... You know, Sefer HaChinuch is suggesting after his whole introduction about why he's so afraid to suggest anything, he says, well, maybe if you understood all the full attributes and characteristics of the human soul, you'd understand that the Para Aduma is like these medical things, medicines that have an effect on you no matter what your status is. V'ze'enu baro lasig bin yonklum, it's not clear nevertheless, ela shechibas hakodesh v'cheshek lasig yediya banistar yanid hakone lichtov. That obviously this isn't an absolutely satisfying reason, but nevertheless, my strong desire to understand the Torah as much as possible on a deep level, it says a cute formulation over here, it says, it moves the quill to write. It's almost as if he's not doing it of his own accord, but rather this desire is just it's so bottled up in him that it has no other expression, but he has to take the pen to paper. Medine a mitzvah mashaam rezichron levracha she mitzvahs para aduma shetia bas arba shanim o bas shalosh. The para aduma has to be 3 or 4 years old. What does that mean? It's not like we say in English or in modern Hebrew that if you say if someone says in modern Hebrew ani ben shalosh, it means that what's what we say in English 3 years old, meaning you've passed your third birthday. But that's not what it means here. But ben shalosh shanim means you're within the third year, which means between the second and third birthdays. So the para. So even if a para aduma, what you think is a para aduma, happens to be born, you have to wait to see if it's still kosher after its second birthday. Well, it's in its third or fourth year. That is the correct time to harvest the para aduma. B'maisa zikena ksheira, if it's really old, it's kosher, it's just not a mitzvah min amuchar. Ve'in lokchim egla megadlin osa ela para. You're not supposed to take for the mitzvah of para aduma. You're not supposed to set it aside already as a young calf. You're supposed to let it develop naturally until it reaches the age of two, and then you can harvest it. But you're not supposed to take it for the express purpose of para aduma and raise it separately until it's of age. Shemar v'kuelech hapara. You're supposed to take it as a cow already and not as a calf. Position emar ba temima. What does it mean? A para aduma temima, an absolutely blemish free cow. Kilomar temimos shel admimos shtei sairos shechoros olevonos postlos ba. That even on the whole body of the cow, if it has two white or black hairs, it's no good.
But one.
One is okay, and also if I it doesn't mention it, but if they're on completely opposite sides of the cow, then as long as they're not viewed in one place, then it's also okay.
Uh-huh.
But if the chances that it won't start going gray in the first 2 years of life are perhaps the key here. The idea is not that the color is so rare, but that you have to find one that's at least two and still has no white or black hairs.
Oh, black hairs harder to see.
Gotta look through it. You gotta examine it carefully before you determine. If you look online, so you see videos of Reb David Feinstein going down to a farm near Lakewood, and he's going to inspect a para aduma that was born at this farm.
Mm-hmm. So, if we find one, who's authorized to do the procedure?
I mean, anyone really. I mean, it has to be a Kohen who does the burning and the whole thing. But there's no actual authorization necessary. Even if it's an outsized para, huge para, or a small para, even if it's a wrong size, so even if it's unusual, so that doesn't passel it. It has to be entirely red. Okay? That's the main thing. Sheina tzricha temimus yoser mishar korbanos. That it doesn't have to have any higher standard than the rest of the korbanos, but any mum that passes a korban will pass a paradum as well. Vim hayuba sairoshi karan adom veroshan mitzeva acher. What if it has the roots of a hair are red and the rest of the hair is black or white or a different color? Or green or purple or what?
Give it a haircut.
Exactly. Oh, Hakol echachar ha'eker v'gozes b'misparayim es roshan ad ha'adam. You just chop it off until you reach the red part, and then you're good to go. But obviously, if the root is a different color and the top is red, then you have a problem. V'ha'avoda posel es bash. Shenemar asher lo Allah aleha ol. It says that no yoke can ever have come upon this cow. V'chol ha'avodos hein ka'ol. And it's not specifically a yoke, but if you use the para to do any labor, then it's no good. Lefikach amru zichronim levracha.
Is that...
What?
Up till it's two.
Yeah.
You're keeping an eye on it. Are you allowed to use it for work?
No.
You said you're not... If you're, even if you're just keeping an eye on it to make sure it's going to still be a problem.
Right, you're not allowed to use it. No, otherwise once you do it, it'll be puzzle.
Oh, okay.
If it was ever used for work, it's puzzle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, so what if, I mean, if we use an animal for work, what if you're simply, you have a dog who goes and fetches the newspaper for you off the front porch? Is that considered your dog working for you, or is it just like, that's a good question on Shabbos there, I think, right?
Yeah, so Shabbos is not allowed. Right, but
the... If a dog wants to do it, never mind, okay, we're getting a little, I'm just curious.
If the dog does of its own accord, that's okay, but you're not allowed to, ask the dog to bring you the newspaper, yeah. No, Shvisa's behema. That was saying the Ten Commandments, right? That one of the people, not people, one of you, so not just people, it was the rest on Shabbos, one of the is animals also, so you're not allowed to... have your animals do labor for you on Shabbos. Yeah.
The famous guy who trained his dog to jump up and press like 24th floor button on his Manhattan apartment.
Oh, that is his... cool.
Apparently it's true. Yeah.
That's clever. You could argue maybe that's the Rabbana and the Shinui. I don't know. Yeah.
But with the newspaper, you could go out and get the newspaper yourself. That's not work.
Well, right,
no, if it's an Arab,
you could plow your field yourself too.
No, we're talking about Hotsah.
Yeah.
If there's no Arab, you can't take.
If there's no Arab, can you get?
See, you don't even remember that there's such a thing as no Arab.
I remember very, 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 very well when there was no Arab.
I'm just peppering you. That you have the problem is that
only too well.
What? The problem is when people get so used to an Eruv, they don't even remember that there's such a thing as not carrying on Shabbos.
They make sure it's down once a year.
But you have people like in Israel. So in Israel, so there is Eruv almost literally everywhere. So people are used to, so they don't even barely realize that there's such a prohibition as what's on Shabbos. You have this problem in European cities, that Israeli tourists go on vacation to European cities, and there's no Erev at all whatsoever. I remember when I was in Budapest, I saw this, the Chabad thing was not where the regular shul was. So I was walking back to the hotel from the regular shul, and they passed there's a huge Chabad building on a very main street in Budapest, and calmly out of the Chabad center are tons of Israelis. Obviously, they're dressed in the white shirt, tzruga. The women are obviously recognizable as Israeli dati people, and they're very calmly. Hordes of them are walking out of the Chabad center with strollers, catalyst bags, whatever, everything. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
When Israel camped in the desert, they had an Arab around the location.
No, that's the whole source for what's considered Rishus HaRabim is the desert. The whole source of what's considered Rishus HaRabim is the public areas of the encampment in the desert. No, there was no Arab.
You were allowed to carry.
No, you were not allowed to carry. No, that's the source for...
Where they store them.
What? No, they didn't have them on Shabbos.
Yeah,
right. Oh, I'm sorry, right. Yeah, but so they had to store it someplace.
They stored their house.
In the house.
Okay.
And it didn't go bad, remember? They only went bad if it... Right. Okay, so... Yeah, so the...
Can't work.
Right, the para cannot work. Shafila nosan taliso ale apsula. That even if you put your talis on it, to bear like a beast of burden, then it would not be... it would not be kosher anymore. Avahaisa tzricha shmira ukshara b'mosera kshera. But if it needed protection, meaning that you put us like a muzzle on it in order to prevent it from doing something it shouldn't be doing, something dangerous, so that is okay. But if it didn't need the muzzle, then it's puzzle. Shekol shmira she'ena tzricha masoihu. That if you put something on an animal that's not needed to protect it, that's called a burden, and that would puzzle it for the purposes of Parah Aduma, and you would also not be allowed to do that on Shabbos. There's a whole chapter of Masechet Shabbos called Bameh Behema. So Bameh Behema Yotza, Bameh Eino Yotza. So it lists all types of accessories for animals, listing what it's allowed to wear on Shabbos, what it's not allowed to wear on Shabbos. Because
animal.
What? Yeah. Look it up. The fifth parak of Masechet Shabbos is called Bameh Behema. Learn it. Go to Mishnayos. So you have to figure out what it's allowed to wear and what's not allowed to wear, which is why, strictly speaking, you're allowed to walk a dog on Shabbos in a place without an Erev, because the dog needs the leash in order that it shouldn't go run off the forest, and you'll never see it again. And it's considered to be wearing the leash.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you're not carrying the leash, it's wearing the leash. But you're not allowed to take the leash and wrap it around your hands. You just have to like let it sit in your hand and hold it. You can't... Anyway, okay, so that's...
I might buy myself a dog. I'll have to ask for the details.
Yeah, good.
Indeed.
Pets, there are a lot of halachos about pets. Very interesting. Okay, but you have to keep that in mind, that if there's something that's unnecessary, talks about various devices to prevent the animals from mating, and you know what, whether it's allowed to wear that on Shabbos or not to wear that on Shabbos. Okay, so all these things, so the rule would apply to the Parah Aduma. If it doesn't need these things for protection, then they would be considered to be a burden, just like it would be considered to be a burden on Shabbos, and the animal wouldn't be allowed to wear that outside. And that would be the same for Parah Aduma. V'haysa nilkachas mimos trumas halishka. That it would be purchased from the communal funds, from the Machzis HaShekel. Upara shenolad b'psul podenosa b'yotza l'chulin. You just redeem it if it had any psul come to it, and it would become totally back to being any regular animal. You could work it, you could shecht it, you could eat it, you could, anything you want.
That's not a requirement, though.
Are you allowed to milk it? It wouldn't be producing milk.
Why not?
It's only two.
Because mammals only produce milk when they've given birth. And it's not allowed, if the Parah Aduma gives birth, then it is disqualified from Parah Aduma.
Oh, it is?
It has to be a virgin cow. Seriously. It's,
okay.
So that was the, one of the things that's not allowed to engage in is it doesn't become pregnant, but it cannot have ever have mated. Then
how are you
going to
know?
You have to keep your own. Farmers know. Yeah, that was one of these things with the this Parah Aduma near Lakewood, that they were trying to keep it to be a kosher Parah Aduma. Then all of a sudden, one day, whoops! It gives birth.
Whoops. Hopefully to another Parah Aduma, but
That would be good. That would certainly be good, but
I guess it's just not the time.
That's not good. So what? So selfish, but Parah, you couldn't control yourself, so we could have a kosher Parah Aduma. You know.
What do you mean yourself? It's the bull that helped you.
Okay. Masha Amru b'inyan zeh she'asorei foza, blaming the men, feminists. Okay.
Yeah.
Masha Amru.
We start out blaming the women.
Consensual. Masha Amru b'inyan zeh she'asorei foza shutamei hu hamisayeya basreifa. The person who becomes tamei when he deals with the Parah Aduma is one who assists with the burning of the Parah Aduma. Kone mahapech ba'basar ba'mashlech etzim. That when it's being burned and you're taking something to stoke the fire, or rearrange the parts of the parah so it burns better. Anything that you're encouraging the fire to burn. But if it's before the parah is actually in the process of being burned, then you do not become a tamei if you're just preparing the wood on the fire. It's actually the flesh is being burned at the time, and you deal with that. And also, once the burning is completely complete, then you also do not become tahor. That's the commentaries on this. I'm going to become tummy. So the sefer, the commentaries, Sefer Chinuch point out, Minchas Chinuch and others point out that this presentation is not exactly accurate because it says explicitly in the Chumash, "Vausefes efer hapara yechabes begadav." That those who gather the ashes of the cow have to take their clothes, their clothes become tame, and they have to immerse them in the mikveh. So it means that once the ashes are gathered and put into a vessel to be combined with the water, then that at that point, the person dealing with them does not become tame anymore, but the person who's actually gathering the ashes does become tame. Umaylus gedolos asu chachomim betaras para bisreifasa, that the sages imposed a lot of chumris in besides what would probably be required on a deraisa level, on an ikar adin level, regarding the para aduma to make sure there be no question about it. That's why they only also only been done 9 times so far. You know, it's somewhat of a big deal. What do they do? Mehein sheyum afrishen shivas yomim kodem sreifas apara koin asarevosa mi beso ume ishto kemoshe mafrishen koin godol avodas yom kippurim. The Kohen who was designated as the one who was going to burn the para aduma, they used to separate from his house. They used to put him in a special room in the Beis HaMikdash to make sure he would not become tamei. And they would separate him from his wife, and they would his whole household. He would have to be by himself, not touching anyone for 7 days. Kimoshim, so that the davar is a Kabbalah. This is a tradition that you do so, and it's similar to what was done to the Kohen Gadol for before Yom Kippur. That on Tzom Gedalia, that they used to separate the Kohen Gadol from everyone to make sure that he would not become tame on for the avod of Yom Kippur. So on each day, even if, as far as you know, this Kohen was Tahor already, he was not Tamei Meis, nevertheless, just in case, they used to sprinkle the waters of a previous Paraduma on him every day.
That bracha, presumably, right?
Right. So they used to do it, they used to sprinkle it on every day, meaning, why every day? You're only supposed to do it on the third day and the seventh day. So just in case somehow the three days before it became Tamei and 7 days before, maybe it was 2 days before, whatever, just to cover all possibilities. So they used to sprinkle him, sprinkle the water on him every day. Vein maze olav el adam shelo nitma b'meis me'olam. And who sprinkled the water on this Kohen who was going to perform the burning of the Parah Aduma? Somebody who had never become Tamei Meis ever. In other words, in theory, you could have someone who was just tahor. It says ve'ein mazel. It says shemazel tzarech shi'atar. The person who is sprinkling has to be tahor. So in theory, you could have somebody who had become tamei with tamei meis before and was now just purified of that through ashes of the paraduma. But just in case, maybe the person who sprinkled on him when he was becoming tamei tahor was not fully tahor properly. So that's why you make sure that this person who's sprinkling now on the Kohen who makes the para has to be never ever had tumas meis at all. Vim tomar vim kein shein hatzorech ela kidei shiyaze olav tahor. After shiyaze olav ish va'afal pish and idma v'kevan shuzolav enu kein dachashin shem azeh shay olav lo haya tahor mitumas meis. We explained the way we explained before.
Isn't there a business about how the water for the Simchas Beis Shoeva was drawn by children who had grown up, and without any possibility of
We're about to get there. All the vessels that were used for this procedure were stone vessels, which are not mekabel tuma. Shein mekabel tuma vim tishal. Oh, you're going to ask me, how is it possible that there you could find someone who had never contracted tumas meis? Seems to be pretty difficult. Keitzad yimtza ish shel nitma mitumas meis olam. Amru chachamim, shayu birushalayim chatzeros benuyos al gabe sela. There were certain courtyards in Yerushalayim that were built on stone. like a whole stone floor. That there used to be a tefach underneath the courtyard. In other words, it wouldn't be built directly on the ground, but on a slightly raised platform over the ground, and it would all be stone. So that would prevent the tumah from a really deep grave from passing this structure. So if you have somebody walking on the ground, or something built directly on the ground, so if there's a grave, again, ordinarily enough, you don't have to be choshesh for this, you don't have to be concerned, but in the paraduma, we would go a little far beyond what's normal. So if you have a grave that's really, really deep, far below ground, and you're walking on top of the ground, so then you're going to become tame, because the tuma goes all the way from the grave all the way to the ground. But if you have a structure on top of it, that's a tefach above ground, then that tefach of airspace traps the tuma, and it won't pass the stone sheet. So that's what they used to do.
Wait, how was this guy supposed to actually make it over to the base of Mikdash then?
Oh, that's great questions. Umevim nashim ubros v'yoldo sham magadlo sham es benehan. They used to bring pregnant women, and they used to give birth in the stone courtyard, so that the child would never have the chance to contract tumas meis. Uchsherutzin lahazos al hakohen asoreif. Who would volunteer for this? That's what I'm saying. Maybe they got paid. I don't know. It's all strange how they would choose these people. Uchsherutzin lahazos al hakohen asoreif mivin shivarim mivnei shekresa nafuach, and that when you want to sprinkle the water on the Kohen is designated to make the paraduma, so they used to bring oxen. So oxen are wide. So again, animals are not makabel tuma when they're alive. So you have they have wide bellies, and so that would also be like an ohel over the ground. But in addition, to make 100% sure, what they used to do, manichen al gabean delosos, they used to stick a door on top of the, like a platform for the kid to sit on. They used a platform on top of the ox. And then they used to have Yoshvin Alena Tinoko Zagabe Adlas. So then you take the little kid and put him on the door. Kadeshie Ohel Mavdil Benam Levain Haaretz. There should be something separating completely between them and the ground of Nechashash Kever Atom, because maybe at the route that the oxen will be walking on, there'll be a grave somewhere buried deep below the ground. So just in case, you want to make sure about that. The choser shall even be added to nokos. They would have stone cups in hand. V'ochin al mea shiloach v'yordin shamu memalin. That they would use the siloam spring to fill the pool, rather. It's called the Gihon spring and the siloam pool. And they used to go down there, and they would fill up the cups. There's not going to be a kever at the home underneath the pool, because people don't usually bury underneath pools or in pools. Okay, people don't usually. Okay, so normally you don't be concerned for kever at the home in other places either. But okay, so that's what they used to do, because the din is that the water that's required for the paraduma that is mixed with the ashes, and then you use that to sprinkle, has to be mayim chayim. Mm-hmm. Mayim chayim is water from a spring. It can't be from a mikveh. It can't be from normally a regular type of river, but it has to be from a spring or a certain type of river that has flowing, constantly changing fresh water. And then you go and go back on the door on top of the ox, and then the ox would take the child to Har Habayis. Once you get to Har Habayis, then the kid can get down and start walking. So again,
how do you know that nobody's, you know, not
could
be buried underneath the Har
Habayis? Because it says that Har Habayis would be built, that was built in the same way, that there was a little bit of airspace between it and the ground, because lest there be a grave somewhere buried deep below. So then you take the water, these cups full of water, and then they would put, mix in some of the ashes of the paraduma, and then they would sprinkle it on the Kohen who was supposed to make the new paraduma. Even though they were protected from Tumas Meis, they could have potentially contracted a different type of Tumah. So they used to immerse them in the mikvah before they used to sprinkle on the it's interesting, you know, the Chol HaDvarim HaElu min HaMailos Yaseiro Sheba Para. So all these things were part of the extra chumras that they instituted regarding the paraduma. Uvara Mishcha Haison Yisrefes. It used to be burnt on the Mount of. What's Hara Mishcha? Mishcha means oil in Aramaic.
Harzesim.
The Mount of Olives. They here are called the Mount of Oil. But it's called, but nowadays we call it the Mount of Olives because olives and oil are pretty much synonymous. V'din. So there used to be a, I think they found the remnants of this actually, that there used to be a ramp leading from the Har HaBayis to the Har HaZesim. And they would walk directly from the Beis HaMikdash to there in order to burn the Paraduma, because not supposed to be done inside the Beis HaMikdash. V'din Ketzad Sor Finosa, so how do you burn it? You have a pile of wood, and you have to throw in the a bit of wool dyed crimson, and you have to throw in a bit of azov, hyssop, and you burn it until it becomes completely consumed by the fire and it becomes ash, and then you sift out the big pieces, and then you have your ashes of the paraduma.
The
azov which,
is for Re'ef Nifoach?
Well, it's completely burned. I don't think it's, you could really tell the smell of the azov when it was burning in the whole pyre of the paraduma. Oh, veizim mekomos manichan Ephra used to keep it in the Beis HaMikdash in these types of vessels. V'chetzad makadshin es hamayim be'efer apara. There's a specific procedure that you have to put in the water first, and then the efer apara, and then you have to make sure it's well mixed. V'chetzad metarin tmei meis b'mei nida, that you have to take a hyssop and you sprinkle on the people on the third and the seventh day. But again, there's no shear, that even if the tiniest bit of the... It has to be done b'chavana. It can't just be that you happen to have a drop fall on you, but if somebody has to sprinkle intentionally on you, then even the tiniest drop is mitara you on the third and seventh day.
Could it be that the azov was sprinkled at the beginning before the real intense smell of the burning of the paraduma was being smelled?
I think they would. What they used to do is they used to put it all together and then just burn it. And then sometimes they used to add more if they need more fuel or something. Used to put more plants.
No, it would make sense to at least have the people be aware of the azov being burned, and that would be able to be done at the beginning before the intense.
Why do people need to be aware?
Well, part of the purpose of adding azov, I suppose, is to create a Re'ef Nifoach.
How does this smell? Smells good?
I don't know specifically.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, how could you distinguish the ashes of paraduma from like wood ashes that were mixed in and things like that?
You can't. You have to keep it separate. Under the watchful eye of the Kohanim who are going to be preserving it. Yeah, so fake, maybe there was an industry, fake paraduma ashes, you have to keep it separate. Yeah, we have to be careful with fakes of mitzvahs. That's why there's the rules that you have to keep them under watchful eye. You know, meat, you know, how could you distinguish if you have a piece of meat? So, shinsa design, towards the end. So, you have to have seals. So it was locked up, sealed up, and you have to make sure that nobody switched it with something else. V'yasa rube pratem v'ar masechta mechuberes al zev v'hi maseches para. It's all explained in maseches para in the Mishnah and the Tosefta. Benuheges Beretz Yisrael Bizman Habayis. It's in Eretz Yisrael in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. V'hi min amitzul shamarnu barosh aseid farshein mutolos al tzibor kula. Meaning the requirement of the paraduma is in the Beis Hamikdash because that's the only time where you have a real requirement that people have to be tahor. But again, it could be done even not in the times of the Beis Hamikdash as well. V'hi min hamitzvah shamarnu barosh ha-sefer shein mutalos al ha-tzibur kulan. It's for the entire Jewish people. V'amar Rabboseinu zicharam levracha sh'teisha paros adumos nasu mishin stav mitzvazot shachar v'vayis bashnia, that there were 9 paros adumos for that from the beginning from Moshe until the destruction of the second temple. Harishon asa Moshe Rabbeinu al v'shalom shnia asa Ezra, the second was done by Ezra, v'sheva me Ezra al korban ha-bayis. So that the one for Moshe lasted the entire time of the first Beis Hamikdash, apparently. Okay? And then there were 7 in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash. And then... V'asiris yasa melech ha-mashiach shigal b'imhem rabimina. Fine. So yeah, the tenth will be done by the Mashiach. V'nei she'inyan zeh shal paraduma hu davar godol b'umaseinu sh'aysa mitaris mideituma chamura. So this was the way of the purifying oneself from the most stringent type of tuma, which is tumas meis. V'zulasa yafshe l'tame meis lasos pesach shi mitzvah gedola meod. We talked before when we were talking about pesach sheni, how important the mitzvah of korban pesach is, as opposed to perhaps the other korbanos even. Nagu kol yisrael likros parsha zo b'chol shana v'shana b'shabes kodem parsha sachodesh. So we have to remind ourselves by reading parshas para. The Shabbos before Parsha Zachodesh. So Parsha Zachodesh is either the day of Rosh Chodesh Nisan or the Shabbos beforehand. And that telling us that Pesach is coming. And before that, we have to remember that at the times of the Beis Hamikdash, if you were Tamei, then you have to become Tahor by means of the Paraduma before you engage in the Korban Pesach. So the Chachamim instituted the reading of the Parsha's Para in order to remember what's supposed to be done in the times of the Korbanos. So it's interesting, he uses the word nagu, that the Jewish people had this custom. So it seems to be more than a custom. It's an institution, derabanan, and Tosfos even writes that the reading of Parashas Par is a deraisa, like Parashas Zachar. That Parashas Zachar, we know we have to read b'deraisa. So the Shulchan Aruch even brings this opinion of Tosfos, that if you live in a small town with no minyan, then you have to dafka go to the big city for Shabbos, Parashas Par and Parashas... So it seems to be a very difficult shita. It doesn't sound anywhere from the Gemara, that the Mishnah Gemara, that reading Parshas Parah is a mitzvah daraisa. How did they get that? But okay, fine. The Parshas is the Rabbana, that's the most poskim paskin. Vashabes hakevul Parshas Chodesh lo mishabes kodesh nishan. Okay, so this the next mitzvah is very short. Let's just knock it off quickly. Mitzvah Shin Sadiches 398. Mitzvah Tuma Shel Meis. That we have to have tumas meis, ritual impurity associated with a dead body, the way the Torah says. Shneamar zosa Torah adam ki amus beohel kol abal ohel b'chol asher beohel yitmas shivas shavim. So if a person dies in a tent or any structure, then anything in that structure shall become impure for 7 days. Mishorsha inyan tumas aguf ameis kosav b'seder amor al hakohanim, that a body is such a holy thing, it was used for such a holy purpose, that Jew lived his whole life with performing all these mitzvos, and now he can't anymore, so the transition from alive to dead is should be something that should awaken stark feelings of badness. So that's why we have tumah when associated with a dead body. You can look back also when we were talking about the Kohanim. So Kohanim, in order to prevent themselves from becoming Tomei with Tumas Meis, so he went into a little bit of explanation regarding what type of structures convey Tumah, touching the dead body versus carrying the dead body versus being in a structure with a dead body. Masechas Olos, he's baruch called Dine Tumas Meis. They all explain the Masechas Olos of the Seder, Bahi Bayom Hashmini, Asei Dalet, Simen Kufnun Beis, Tire, Kosuv Gamkin Ki Ramban. He explained before the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. The Ramban does not list each type of tuma as a separate mitzvah. Shlul Achshav Kol Dinei Tumos B'Cheshvan Mitzvos V'Nimuko Imo. And the Sefer Chinuch actually likes the opinion of the Ramban, but he He follows, because the Rambam is the most organized structure, so his whole work follows the structure of the Rambam.